If you could control the temperature just by talking to it, in this house there would be nothing like a constant argument going on. You would tell it to adjust the temperature and it would start recommending marriage counselors.
Hello and welcome to Terrifying Robot Dog, episode 13 for Friday, July 3rd, 2015. I'm Jonathan Stark.
And I'm Kelly Shaver.
And we're here to talk about how technology is changing the way we interact with the world. This week, we talk about the potential pros and cons of conversational computing. Please stay tuned. Terrifying Robot Dog is next.
I always feel like we need to insert some kind of digital dog bark after you say stay tuned part.
That's a good idea. So recently, Amazon announced Amazon Echo for general sale to the public. It's been, it was a beta invite type of thing going back maybe
almost a year.
Was it that long? Oh, yeah. You know what?
Yeah.
People didn't start getting it until like mid-May of this year.
Oh, but, okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I had a beta invite a couple of times and I never pulled the trigger on it. And I'm wishing now I had, because I just would have got it for the cheaper price. But I'm definitely going to pick one up.
Yeah. So it's sort of the reason that we're going to talk about conversational computing today. Although it's not an episode about Echo really, but we should tell people what it is first, because appears to be, according to the reviews, the first consumer device that really brings that original Star Trek computing experience to the home, where you just say, hello, computer, set phasers to stun or whatever.
Yeah, it can integrate with a lot of technologies. Like, I plan to get one in and hook it up with my Hue lights, so I can just say, hey, Echo, turn off the lights in the office.
Mm-hmm. So let's I want to describe real quick what it is, because people might not know what it is.
Okay.
So it's a physical device. It's shaped like a toilet paper tube. It's like black and has this sort of like, it looks almost like an old microphone in a way.
Reminds me of a skinny Mac Pro.
Yeah, kind of. It's sort of like a new take on an old microphone, has some lights at the top. It's kind of a cool looking thing, I have to say. And it's a piece of hardware that you, you put someplace in your house and you can talk to it and tell it to do certain things. So probably most people are most familiar with Siri, or at least identify all voice computing as Siri right now.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a physical device that you put in your house, and it has all sorts of, it's interesting because it's not a one trick pony. It does a whole bunch of things, like you can say, I almost said Siri. You can say Alexa, which is the,
it's the name of it.
That's the name of it, in the same way that Siri is the name of Apple's thing. So you say, hey, Alexa, can you play the last audiobook I just downloaded? And it's like Bluetooth speakers, and it will communicate. I don't know if it communicates directly to your phone or if it goes over the Wi-Fi and you're authenticated to your Audible account through Amazon or whatever.
I think it connects to your wireless network.
I would hope so. That would be much cooler.
Yeah, I'm like 99.5% positive that it does that.
But at the end of the day, the point is that you say, hey, Alexa, play that book I've been listening to, and it starts doing it right through the hardware. So the hardware is like supposedly a really nice speaker. You can use it as a Bluetooth speaker as well, I've read. And you can do things like,
you can reorder products you previously purchased on Amazon.
Yes. So you can get information about things. You can basically do Google or Wikipedia type searches and it'll read you back the answers. I mean, in a sense, it's like very Siri-like functionality, but it's not, you don't have to pull out your phone and hold down the button. You just sort of talk into the room and, you know, tell it what you want it to do.
Yeah, it has a lot of multi-directional mic pickup on it, so it gets good voice recognition from anywhere in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And then it also has this remote that you can carry around with you that has a mic on it. So if you're out of the room, you can still communicate with it.
Right, which might, you know, which might make sense if you're like my dad and he's got a music system that runs throughout the house, and he might throw one of those remote control things in a couple of, you know, near a couple of different couches in case you wanted to change the music from like the den versus the living room, wherever, you know, whatever the thing, or the office. He'd probably put it in the office, let's say.
Right. Or not even just music system, but also if you have Hue lights in various rooms of your house or something.
Yeah. Yeah, so you never know where you're going to be, but you can talk to it from wherever you are.
Does it integrate with Nest? That would be really cool. You could say, hey, Siri, turn the temperature up.
Well, it says it's compatible with Belkin and Philips, Belkin Wemo stuff and Philips Hue, mm-hmm. which makes me think it's not.
If you could control the temperature just by talking to it, in this house, there would be nothing like a constant argument going on. Like the thing would just have a nervous breakdown in like a week.
Listen, you too. Computer talking. Yeah,
exactly. You would tell it to adjust the temperature and it would start recommending marriage counselors.
Yeah. Or maybe it would just do it.
Yeah, right.
Kelly, how does Rich's desire to have the temperature lower make you feel?
Cold.
Thanks, Alexa. So one of the things that was interesting when this was first announced was that everybody, I think, certainly both of us, thought it was weird that you didn't say, you know, hey, Echo or something like that, because the thing was called Echo. Why would you say, hey, Alexa?
Right. And I thought for a while you could do both. But then by the time it came out, it was just Alexa.
Mm-hmm. And the reason is because the voice interface, Alexa, a.k.a. Amazon's Siri, is not going to be limited to this particular Echo device, which suddenly makes lots of sense that you'd have two different names for
it. Yeah, it does. It does make lots of sense. Echo is just a piece of hardware for communicating with Alexa.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And so, and to sort of close the loop on Echo and why we even brought it up at all, is that on Amazon, it's only recently went on sale, but I guess a lot of people have got the beta version of it. Mm-hmm. It already has 21,000 reviews.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And it's almost 5 stars. Everybody is saying that this thing totally works.
Yeah. Every review I've seen of it has been like, yeah, this thing is great. Mm-hmm. A couple of them, they're like, well, the Bluetooth speaker is not great if you're an audiophile. And, well, of course, Bluetooth speakers never will be.
Yeah.
But
you're playing MP3s over it anyway.
Yeah, exactly. But as far as the functionality of it, every review I've seen, people seem to just love it. And I really want one. If I hadn't ordered an Oculus Rift earlier this week, I would have gone ahead and purchased it.
Oh, wow. I can't wait for that. So the huge takeaway for me here is this is the first thing of its sort that brings a real consumer grade, it just works user experience to conversational computing or using your voice as the user interface.
Yeah, it's the most, it already feels way more accessible than Siri.
Yes. So Siri is obviously very well known and Google Now does a really good job of this as well. But there's something very different about having it like a countertop. It's part of your house. It's not something you carry around in your pocket.
Yeah, you don't have to pull out your phone and go, okay, Google.
Yeah, so we were thinking about this and who cares? Like, why does anybody care about saying, hey, Alexa, could you reorder diapers? Or, hey, Alexa, could you play that audiobook for me? Or, hey, Alexa, could you play that song again?
Yeah. At first, it just seems like a convenience for lazy people.
Yeah. And I suppose it is in a sense. It's like, but so is everything. So if you think first world, pretty much everything is that. Everything is like reduce the friction, increase the convenience, and people will pay money for it.
Yeah. Like your remote control for your television.
Oh, I love that one. Yeah.
Yeah.
You think convenience doesn't matter? Take the batteries out of your remote control for your TV and see how long you can last. The remote control on the TV changed the advertising industry because there was because before the remote control, there was much higher friction for getting up off the couch and going over and changing the channel because the commercials were going on for too long. You're just going to keep sitting there. But once you could surf, changed everything. Didn't change everything about TV ads. The length, the way that they were, like the volume of them, the punchiness, all of that stuff changed. It wasn't these sort of art pieces that used to be in between TV show segments.
No, they had to be short little things that are going to grab your attention and sell you the thing, and that's that.
Yeah, it became much more crass, basically. It was like, blunt instrument instead of this sort of, artistically created.
Yeah, it's not Apple's 1984 commercial.
Exactly. So that's an example of technology having an effect on a real world business. So the convenience here is not having to pull out your phone, which probably sounds ridiculous to most people because it's still kind of a new thing. Even a lot of people are still kind of blown away by everything you can do with a smartphone. It keeps like doing new things, and you know, non-geeky people are just like, did you know you can just take a picture of your credit card and the numbers go into the field for you, you know? And yeah, that stuff's pretty cool, but you just forget about it.
My dad's like, my phone just does stuff without me. Like, I don't know how it knows, but I got, and he called me, and we were talking the other day, and he said, I got up the other morning and my phone told me that I had 13 minutes to get to work. I'm like, how does it know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or you're just going to pull out your phone one day and it's going to just say duck.
Nice. So the convenience, the first world convenience of being able to talk to the air and have things happen is pretty cool. We're almost getting to that magical, like bordering on magic type stuff where, mm-hmm. you know, you can project your will across physical space and have, you know, you say something and like atoms move. You know, yeah. It's like, it's getting closer and closer to that. And that's all interesting and cool. But there's some side effects that I think are even more interesting.
Yes.
A statistic that often shocks people is that there are roughly 750 million people. So that's like double the population of the United States that cannot read or write. So functionally illiterate. And those people have very little access to what we've come to call the sum total of human knowledge, which is the web. You know, what does it mean for your life if you can't go online and do a search? Like, take that away from your life.
Yeah. If you can't read, then the only things you know are limited to what you have heard or been told.
Yeah. It's like you are basically living just like pre-literate humans. Well, not just mm-hmm. like, because you're surrounded by literate humans and signs and all these things everywhere that just like mocking you. And the assumption is that these people would want to read, but maybe a better assumption would be that they don't really need to. So they didn't bother mm-hmm. learning, but you know, I don't know what the reason is, but the fact of the matter is that they are getting a wildly different online experience if they even bother going online in yeah. any way.
Yeah. And a very different life experience that is in many ways, whether to their detriment or not, that is in many ways more limited.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, PricewaterhouseCoopers did a study in the UK a couple of years ago that basically everything they measured, every aspect of society that they measured, that when you compared people who did have internet access and people who didn't, virtually everything about their lives was demonstrably improved by gaining access to the internet. Which isn't surprising to us, certainly, but that is perhaps surprising to the general population, that non-nerds who are just trying to do things like open up a bank account or renew their driver's license or apply to school. If you don't have access to the internet and you need to, say, walk down to your library, wait in line, you know, you don't have a phone, whatever it is, that is a huge, I want to say negative, it's a huge impediment.
Inconvenience, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's major friction, because enough yeah. things have moved online, enough institutions have moved online that all of a sudden, I can't imagine that, let's say, the old system that got augmented with, the, you know, let's say, an in-person visit to the Registry of Motor Vehicles, mm-hmm. always a fun thing. I can't imagine that experience has been getting upgraded. I think the upgrade was that now you can do it online. So, you know, for somebody who is cutting it close, you know, is trying to get employment, is trying to, you know, pick themselves up by the bootstraps or whatever, if they have the internet, it's like a superpower. It's like giving them a superpower.
Yeah, I know people who've lost their jobs, and then everyone's saying, well, you should cut back on expenses, get rid of internet, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, well, if I get rid of internet, I'll never get another job.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very powerful. I'm sure anyone listening to this is cool with that. So if you think about all, you know, 750 million adults can't really use the internet. They can use stuff maybe like YouTube, and I'm sure they could get around, but, you know, certain sites, I guess.
Can't use it efficiently?
Can't yeah.
Can't use its fullest potential?
Not even close, right. I mean, you can see cat GIFs all day long. Which is probably close to the full potential.
Probably like 90% of the internet's potential. But
yeah, core feature. But yeah, but seriously, that's like a major issue. So now all of a sudden, if you have conversational computing, not Echo, of course, that's but just an interface that allows people to talk to, essentially search the way, like do online, browse the web, do online activities, mm-hmm. just by talking. And that's going to greatly increase their quality of life.
Yeah, it's going to need to read a lot more of the internet to them than such services do now. But
sure, but that, you know, any smartphone will do that now.
Yeah.
So just turn on accessibility features. The trick is being able to navigate the web by talking to it. And I suppose there are accessibility features for that too. But these are in that case, you're driving a graphical user interface with your words,
voice.
Like tab to next link, tab to next link, tab, or whatever.
Location bar.
Yeah, this is much more declarative, where you say, I want to get this done. I want to know this information. And it just gets it and reads it back to you. So that's much more, that's very Siri-like. That's what, you know, Google Now is. And Alexa. It's the same kind of thing.
And I guess Cortana.
And Cortana is Microsoft, right? So you basically have four huge players working on this voice interface, and trying to think which ones are open to developers. I believe Alexa is open to developers,
mm-hmm.
and Google Now on tap is open to developers. I'm not sure if that includes the voice input, but eventually one or all of them will be open to developers.
Yeah. And it's not going to be Siri.
It won't be Siri last, yeah, if ever.
Yeah, I think this is something where I have a speculation that Siri is going to start falling way behind mm-hmm. in the voice conversational computing platform fairly quickly, because it seems like lately all they're just doing is adding gimmicks to Siri.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I mean, that's par for the course for Apple, is that they... You know, they do an amazing job with hardware. They try and control the entire stack, and it means that they can't get contributions from outside of them. And they're historically just not that great with software. They don't do multi-user architectures well. They don't get it. They know how to make apps for a single person or an operating system for a mm-hmm. single user. Okay, so you would think, dear robot listener, that we'd be like, oh, conversational computing is great. It's going to be awesome for accessibility. It's going to get people in emerging economies online that can start to increase their quality of life. But then there's this interesting flip side, the dark side of conversational computing, which is that if you can get around the internet without learning how to read.
And once you can get around the internet, you can learn absolutely anything.
Yeah. It is going to decrease the need for reading.
Right. Why bother to learn to read if you don't need it?
Right. And people will say, well, there's plenty of other reasons to need to read. Yes, that's true. Not everything's on the internet, but an entire education is on the internet. And if you could mm-hmm. engage in an education without ever learning to read,
Learning to read as well. You may read, but at a much lower level.
Right. And so this is very interesting to me, because I've got little kids, and Cooper is starting to read words now. It's not that he's reading them. He just recognizes them, which I guess is the beginning of reading, right?
Yeah. The first step.
Yeah. But he doesn't really care, and he can search for stuff. If Siri was better,
mm-hmm.
he could just use that, and he recognizes the microphone symbol even on my laptop in Google search. He recognizes it. He clicks on it and he says, search for images of images of clone troopers. And it's usually pretty good. Every once in a while you get some errant results, or you get like real soldiers.
The occasional Millennium Falcon.
Yes. You get the occasional Millennium Falcon, which is horrifying.
Yeah. I don't think we've ever explained that, but.
I once tried to have Cooper voice search for Millennium Falcon on, I said, pictures of Millennium Falcon to my Google Glass. And it, for some reason, interpreted that as pictures of naked ladies. Yeah. And I was like, no, and it was on Google Glass. I'm like, how do I shut this thing off?
Right.
So, what was yours? The
Oh, yeah. Kira was searching for, it wasn't a voice search, but she was on Google Images and she wanted to search for pictures of girls on horses. She was like six. I was like, no, and diving for the computer.
Oh, that's so wrong. Yeah. So anyway, so here's, this is a quote that gets at what we're getting at. And this quote is from a woman named Kate Wilson, who's the founder of Nosy Crow, which is a children's publishing company in the UK. Mm-hmm. And she says, "I can absolutely imagine a scenario in which mass literacy is just a historical blip, something that started in the 19th century and lasted until the middle of the 21st. Technology could easily make the ability to decode text irrelevant." And I was like, the word in there that got me was decode.
Decode, yeah.
Yeah, because text is just an encoding type.
Right, it's just, I'd never thought of it like that before, but it's just a way to encode information.
Yeah, and as developers, we both know that encodings go in and out of style all the time.
Yes.
And some are more useful for certain things than for other things. So some are very verbose, but are more reliable. Some are more elegant, but don't work in as many places.
And I mean, it's been, what, centuries, and we haven't yet agreed on a standard for language.
Yeah, right?
We don't have an encoding standard for the written word.
Yeah, well, and so the thing is, it's really hard to learn how to read and write. It's really mm-hmm. hard. It doesn't just come naturally the way talking does. So you really have to work at it. And so if you look at the trend of, you know, switch back to the first world, if you look at the trend of like ROI mm-hmm. for inconvenience, the ROI's got to be really high.
Yeah, it's already starting to shift in subtle ways. Like, they don't teach cursive handwriting in schools anymore.
Yeah.
A lot of schools, like Kira's school district, does not use textbooks.
That's wild. I didn't know that.
Yeah, they have some books in the classroom for various subjects, but then most of the information and learning is done through like whiteboards and iPads and just teacher-presented information and that sort of thing.
Mm.
And online.
Yeah.
I only have one major reservation about decrease of literacy.
Hmm.
The best way to learn, and this may translate anyway, but the best way to learn to be a good writer is to read a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not reading, is the quality of the information that you're going to end up being, that you're going to create, is it going to be of lower quality?
Why would you write if no one was reading? You'd just be a storyteller. You'd tell stories.
Right. So, I mean, I guess we're going to go from reading and writing to listening to stories and telling stories.
Right. Back to that.
I wandered around a bookstore yesterday looking for a novel to read.
An actual bookstore. Wild.
And I found a couple of novels that were interesting, but I just couldn't pull the trigger. I just couldn't do it.
Really?
Really. I'm like, nah, I could get this on Audible for $4 cheaper.
Yeah.
Or then I'm going, but I could get it on the Kindle and not have to fool with this paper thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I never thought that I would be that kind of person who would say, oh, I'd rather read it on an e-reader than on a printed on a paper book. And for a while that was because it's just easier for me to see on the Kindle. But now I'm just like, it's thicker. I got to flip pages. It's, you know, I don't know. It's so much easier to just toss a Kindle in the bag. And
yeah. The thing that switched me off of physical books was mm-hmm. when I was traveling a lot and I'd be like, oh, I've got a half an hour to read something, but I can't because I forgot to throw it in my bag.
Yeah.
And so then I'd buy it on Kindle on my phone, and now I'd have both the physical book at home unread mm-hmm. and the Kindle version. So finally I was like, okay, forget it.
Just getting the digital.
Yeah, and now,
but I do find myself getting more audiobooks now.
I was just going to say the same thing. I don't read books anymore.
Yeah, I used to. When I was a little kid, I listened to a lot of audiobooks because reading was very difficult for me to do because of my eyesight. I read really slowly for many years.
Mm-hmm.
And I listened to audiobooks. My dad read to me a lot. But then once I got older and reading became more efficient, I greatly preferred that and did for a very long time. It's only recently that I've started to get into audiobooks instead of reading something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just suits my lifestyle better.
Yeah.
It's definitely a different experience, and you retain things differently.
Differently, yeah.
But weirdly, I can re-listen to them.
Yeah, it's like, I think I read The Martian once and I've listened to the audiobook like 3 times now.
Yeah, see? It's exactly like that.
Yeah, and going back through and listening to Dresden Files.
Yeah, I've listened to all of them at least twice. And that's 15 books.
Yeah.
So talk about getting your money's worth.
Yeah.
So then it's like, is my vocabulary going down? Is your does vocab only count if you know how to spell it and all like that? Or like Cooper has an amazing vocabulary for someone his age, but he can't read. So is he smart? Like if he's 25 and is a brilliant thinker, but can't read or write, is he smart or dumb?
No, he's smart. He just has a different set of skills.
But that's the like we associate the ability to read very closely with intelligence.
Very closely with intelligence.
And that is the piece that I think is breaking off. That's the piece. It's just one skill now. It's going to turn into just one skill. Like if you could read music, it's a skill that is useful in many cases.
Yeah. You know, there was a time when a large population of people weren't allowed to learn to read because we didn't want them to gain the intelligence to think and do for themselves.
Well, if you think about it, books were the original web. Mm-hmm. That's where all the information was stored. That was how it was stored and transmitted.
The original internet is monks copying scrolls.
Seriously. Look at how, and like that sounds funny, but look how inefficient it is. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the new efficient way, it's not surprising that the web became so popular. And if we move to a situation that's even more efficient, where we don't even have to learn how to read or write or bother typing or reading, then all of a sudden, that's the new skill.
It's like illuminating manuscripts versus searching for an audiobook.
It is pretty harsh when you think of it like that, like the art of it and the sort of, I mean, like, you know, what? Even if you think of like, geez, I don't know, like, I've got some really beautifully published bound books that are just like an art piece unto themselves, never mind the content. And that's, you know, like even the Lemony Snicket books are very, very, you know, well, so I read those. Those are physical books that we read. And they're super, the whole experience of it is just completely different because, it's in bed, it's at night.
Yeah,
they're illustrated. The book purposely has a ragged cut on the edges. It's like this, it's meant to be like an artifact. And it, for whatever reason, it overwhelms my desire to
listen to someone else read it to you.
Yeah, or have the convenience of, well, I mean, I'm reading it to Cooper, so.
Right.
It's that whole thing, like that whole thing of reading to your kid, me reading to my kid at night is just a totally disconnected experience from the vast majority of my reading needs.
Is that going to go away? Or are we going to have devices reading to our kids for us?
I have many, many times considered when I'm going on a trip to record a chapter before I go.
And you can just listen to it at night before bed.
Many times.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think, dear listener? Do you think conversational computing is going to be a good thing, a bad thing, or somewhere in between? That's our show for this week. I'm Jonathan Stark.
And I'm Kelly Shaver.
And we hope you join us again next week for Terrifying Robot Dog. Bye.
Bye.
Would you like to support Terrifying Robot Dog? Just think of two friends who would dig the show and send them to terrifyingrobotdog.com for links to iTunes, Facebook, and RSS feeds. If you don't have two friends, you can still help us out by leaving a nice review in iTunes. Thanks.